those who saw our announcement on Facebook, we were going to be speaking with the author of a new book called Corona False Alarm. I actually recorded this late last week, but we had trouble getting the audio file going this morning. So we'll play that next week. We'll have it for you for next week's show. So those that were looking for that, stay tuned next week. That's Dr. Shukarik Bhakdi, MD, Corona False Alarm. He and his wife, Dr. Karina Rice, both wrote this book. It was a great interview. I really enjoyed talking with Dr. Bhakdi. And I would consider him a world's expert in microbiology. He was the head of the Department of Microbiology at the University of Mainz from 1990 until 2012. So he's an expert in immunology, bacteriology, virology, parasitology. Pretty smart guy when it comes to germs. Fascinating book that he wrote, Corona False Alarm. So again, next week we'll talk to him about that. And then the following week I'm planning on having Dr. Tom Cowan in. He also wrote a book called The Contagion Myth, Why Viruses Are Not the Cause of Disease. So that's Dr. Thomas Cowan. You can get his book at Barnes & Noble's. Amazon's not carrying his book. And we'll talk about that in 2 weeks from now. So we'll have a couple authors on over the next couple of weeks talking about this coronavirus contagion myth. And if you followed us at Veritas for any amount of time, you understand that we don't give much weight to the germ theory at all. And we're not saying germs don't exist. We're not saying germs cannot impact our life. Obviously, they can. But they're secondary to the terrain. Cockroaches show up in your kitchen when you don't take the trash out for lots of weeks. Flies only come where the garbage is. They don't create the garbage. So these germs, these bugs, these critters are part of our environment, but they feast on disrupted or dirty terrain. And when it comes to the human cell, that simply means a cell that's not producing energy and clearing exhaust. People want to talk about a low oxygen state in the body, or maybe an acidic. There's an acidic state. People want to talk about an alkaline diet or alkaline water. Well, alkaline water is mineralized water, so of course that's good for you. You need the minerals. Same with alkaline diet. Alkaline diet tends to be things that are nutritious for you. So I'm not opposed to those things. But what I'm saying is your cellular environment, the oxygen content, the pH of that environment is affected by the cell's health, the cell's ability to make energy and clear exhaust that we talk about all the time on the show. So it's very, very clear. And honestly, it's been clear way before COVID-19 came along. It's been clear that people that are susceptible to germs are the ones who don't have good cellular health, the ones who don't make energy and don't clear exhaust well. This can manifest as hypertension, heart disease, dementia, obesity, insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, autoimmune disease, all these quote-unquote diseases that are the comorbid conditions that people are succumbing to. As Dr. Bhakdi will describe next week in the interview, it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. But we hump a lot of things up on that camel, on his back, through our diet and lifestyle. And then one little germ comes along and boom, breaks the back. So it's more about all the weight that we're carrying, all the burden that our cells carry, and the burden of toxicity and malnourishment. We eat plenty of calories in America, but there's no nutrients. There's hardly any nutrients in those processed food-like substances. My kids were at a fall festival this weekend, and we sent them without me or Jamie to watch over them. Big brother was there, but they came home with candy, and they were asking if they could eat some. So I started looking through it. Of course, knowing sugar is going to be there. And that's okay. A little sugar every now and then on a special occasion. It's not like we avoid sugar all the time. But I picked up a package of Rice Krispie Treats, and I'm just going to call it out. Well, those Rice Krispies, put them down. Throw them in the trash.
What? I mean, that's the nectar of the
flip
dogs.
It over and read the, which my kids have been trained to do. They read what's going in their mouth. Are you going to let your kids get under your sink where you keep all your chemicals, or out in your garage on the shelf where you keep all your chemicals, and let them just put something in their mouth without reading what that is? Of course not. And just because it's packaged and approved to be sold as food doesn't mean it's nourishing for your cells. It doesn't mean it's going to help your cell make energy and clear exhaust. So I challenge everyone, go look up a Rice Krispie treat on the package ingredient list, what's in that. What you will find are processed food-like substances, corn solids, corn syrup, which is high fructose corn syrup, vegetable oil, a bunch of other chemicals I couldn't pronounce and I don't know what they do. So I went home and told Ellie Jean, Ellie's my 13-year-old who has a bakery called Sweet Life Bakery. I told Ellie, you're going to have to make some Rice Krispie treats for people this fall the right way. Iron. There was iron in the Rice Krispie treat. I thought it'd be all right from an iron perspective because it's rice. And I know they fortify the wheat flour. But this was separate from the rice. It was just a separate ingredient. They fortified the Rice Krispie treat with iron. Unbelievable. But anyways, there's a way to make a Rice Krispie treat with just Rice Krispies and some sugar, I'm sure. And if there has to be an oil, palm oil probably. And just a little preview. I'm about to arrange a deal with Healthy Traditions for local people here in Lubbock anyways. You'll be able to come buy this healthy food at Veritas Medical. We're going to start selling Healthy Traditions. Coconut oil, olive oil, red palm oil, along with their einkorn flour. Even their einkorn wheat berries, if you want to grind that yourself and truly have whole grain bread or sourdough. So we're going to start carrying those things pretty shortly, hopefully within the month. But back to COVID. So there's so many different things we could talk about here. I've been privileged to be on a number of group calls and texts and emails and exchanges and meetings with various doctors around the country. The frontline doctors that will be meeting again next weekend. I won't be able to attend in Washington, D.C., but many will. Dr. Simone Gold, Dr. Stella Emanuel, and many, many, many other doctors, because their group has grown substantially since that summertime Supreme Court step meeting. Hopefully people saw that before it was taken down, because it was, I believe, President Trump's son retweeted that, and then Twitter took it down, and I think other social media platforms took it down also. But basically these were doctors saying, hey, we're out on the front line, and we are using hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and azithromycin combination, and we are seeing tremendous positive benefit from using that triple therapy. You stay at home, you take the therapy, and you don't end up in the hospital. There was one doctor on this group exchange text, I think he said 1,800 patients he's treated this way. Early on, he had a couple of hospitalizations, and he noted it was because the patients coming into his clinic with these symptoms and had a positive COVID test started to panic. And just the panic exacerbated the respiratory symptoms enough. So he started adding in clonazepam, which is an anti-anxiety pharmaceutical. And with that combination, he's had zero hospitalizations. These are even in comorbid patients and elderly patients with diseases. So there's many of these doctors around the country doing this. Unfortunately, many doctors are still scared about prescribing this medicine that is legal. It's been around forever. We use it all the time to treat psoriatic arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis and other autoimmune diseases. We use it for prophylaxis when we go to Africa for malaria. So it's well studied, well used, many, many years, decades of use, great safety profile. And it's working. It's working great. And there's even one of the doctors just published a week ago a meta-analysis. So a meta-analysis is a summary or a review that looks back over many, many other studies. So 5 or 6 or 7 studies on hydroxychloroquine, and he summarizes all of those studies and published that. I'll try to look for that at the break and give you the exact details of it when we get back from that break. But that's a whole narrative that's not being spoken of, and we'll get into that in some of these interviews too. And probably the biggest narrative that I've been talking this for weeks or months now is the testing. Every day we get these reports of positive tests. Lubbock County has, or the city of Lubbock has X number of positive tests. We are past the pandemic. It's over. It's done. That death curve that was the little blip that goes up like it does every year with influenza has come down. And it came down August 25th or 28th, like Dr. Michael Levitt, Stanford Nobel laureate, predicted it would in Texas. He predicted Sweden. He predicted all this. How could he predict that? Because this is historical data you look at with these viral illnesses. Once we had the true numbers, which was hard to get out of China, but once you had the true infection rate and you started to understand the true herd immunity rate, then it became very easy to predict this. So we're past it. We're done. You're more likely to die from influenza than COVID-19 if you're less than 60 years old. And even if you're above 60, if you don't have comorbid conditions. So what's the point of testing for it? And I would say this would be like testing for the common cold. Why do we need to know how many people right now have a viral illness running around? And if the test is potentially 90% false, why do we need to know? We used to only test people that had symptoms. And oftentimes, I wouldn't even test people that had symptoms. If they had a classic case of viral illness, even the flu, I mean, it wasn't long ago, I wasn't testing at all. And rarely do I test now, although our practice is much different. People ask me, how many people have y'all treated? How have your patients done COVID-19? We've hardly treated any. And I'd like to say it's, and I think it's accurate, even though we see really sick patients, very quickly their metabolic health will start to turn around when they nourish their cells with real food and they quit giving their cells processed food-like substances. Their immune system turns around. I'm not saying they don't get a virus or don't get a cold, but it doesn't take them down and they don't even need extra treatment. Their own immune system is very capable. And even in standard Americans who are not our patients, who are not eating real food and moving a little bit every hour and drinking structured mineralized water and trying to be at peace, working on that peace pillar, even in people who don't know anything about those four pillars, the standard American population, the vast majority, depending on the age group, 80 to 90%, some studies 98% of people will have no symptoms or mild symptoms. So it's not just our clinic, obviously, that the patients are doing very well. It's the vast majority of people in general. But back to testing, PCR tests, the guy that invented the PCR said, do not use this test for diagnostic purposes. And I explained this in a Facebook Live video a few weeks ago. All this PCR test does, so when they swab the back of your sinuses, they're collecting fragments of DNA, RNA, this genetic material on that cotton swab. And then they take that cotton swab and put it into that test tube and swirl it around and send it off to the lab. And so there's lots of genetic pieces of genetic material in there. Part of that's from your own human DNA. Some of that's from bacteria in your sinuses. Some of that's from viruses in your sinuses. We have to remember there's 10 to the 31 power viruses floating around in the air. Another 10 to the 30 power in the soil. Another 10 to the 30 viruses in the water, in the ocean. We're constantly, viruses just fall down out of the sky. They get picked up in the jet stream. And I mean, you're constantly breathing in microbes. That's why the germ theory is a debunked theory. We are 90%, 99% of the cells in you aren't you. They're germs, bacteria, virus, parasite, fungi. We are a symbiotic walking environment of bugs, of germs. Even the quote-unquote bad ones, the pathological ones, we'll say E. coli, salmonella, strep, staph. We have all those bugs in us right now. Women who get a bladder infection, 90% of the time, it's E. coli. Well, the E. coli is there right now. Even if you don't have a bladder infection, it's always there. when does it create symptoms of burning with urination and frequent urination and can actually go up into the kidney and give you kidney infection, get into your bloodstream and give you sepsis and kill you. Yes, it could do all that. But what allows it to do that? It's when the environment changes in the person, in the patient. E. coli is in every patient right now, but it's not going to cause any trouble when it's kept in balance, when it's kept in check, when the numbers are kept low. And the numbers are kept low by, in good part, your good bacteria, your good flora. The trillions of bacteria that are beneficial, they keep the staph and strep and E. coli in check in low numbers where they can't overgrow to the point that they elicit an immune response and symptoms. So it's all about balance. You're never going to kill all these germs. And it's so related to the agricultural world. You're never going to kill all the weeds. They're always going to come back. They're going to find a way around the herbicides. They're going to be resistant, as we're seeing. It's not about killing the things you think are bad. There is no bad. Dr. Tom Cowan's going to talk about that in 2 weeks, I'm quite sure. I have not interviewed him yet, but in 2 weeks we're going to have him on. Contagion is his book, and it's all about this. These bugs serve a purpose. And to go around trying to kill things that we think, in our wisdom, that we think are so bad, is not the most beneficial way to go. Now, I'm not saying that when you're in the ICU dying of sepsis from E. coli, that you don't try to kill the bug. I'm not saying that. Of course you do. What I'm trying to convince you of is that E. coli is in you right now. What keeps you out of the ICU and septic is a strong immune system and a very diverse flora, microbiome. That's what the regenerative agriculture guys have figured out with the soil. How do you get high-quality, nutrient-dense food? You need high-quality, nutrient-dense soil full of life, full of microbes. And when you sterilize that soil, you can't get the full benefit of the soil. Actually, it's dirt at that point when it's sterilized. And that plant will grow, but the produce it produces will be not near as beneficial to your cells because it's devoid of nutrients. So the staph, strep, and E. coli and COVID-19 will be kept in check by a strong immune system and a diverse microbiome. So our focus, every billboard, I mean, I see these billboards here in Lubbock. I don't know who's putting them up, probably the city. Mask up, it saves a life, or something like that. Where's the evidence? Who is telling these people, well, no who, politicians, but where is the science? There is a pile, and I'm talking dozens and dozens and dozens of studies over the years on these respiratory viruses the size of, and even bigger than, the size of COVID-19 are not blocked by the mask. That's just the way it is. There's been no argument about that. No doctor's ever thought this. No one's ever said this. No, I mean, it's never been that we've never recommended this before for flu in the flu season. It's just not the way this thing works. So then as a physician, if I have a patient come to me, say, doc, and my patients do this because they're educated and they know that there's conflicts of interest in medicine. So patients will demand evidence. Show me the randomized controlled trials. Show me the studies. Show me the evidence. And there can be a study that might say it's beneficial, but then you got to dive deeper into it. How was the study conducted? Was it a good study? Who funded it? Who really put it out? What does it even say? But if someone truly asked me, show me the studies and that the benefit outweighs the risk or the harm, I couldn't. So in any other part of my job as a doctor, if I'm going to recommend something that doesn't have benefit but has harm, and I'm going to tell them this is the best thing for you to do to prevent something, but I can't back it up, that's called malpractice. So when you have patients press you on, show me the evidence, and I can't, then why could I go out in the public and just say that or put a billboard up that says that? I can't. I mean, this is all political stuff. I just saw a survey. Gallup put a survey out, and it was totally right along party lines, Republican versus Democrat. And all the questions were about coronavirus. Like, do you wear a mask when you're indoors, outdoors, when you're socially gathering? Every question about it was, the answers were just totally different. No, I don't, or yes, I do, totally based off party lines. So that tells you right there, this whole thing is one big political and politicized issue. So if a patient asks me to show them the evidence, I can't on the mask. Yet there's billboards saying it's the most effective way. My wife and kids were in Target the other day, called me, kind of not panicked, but I mean, definitely not a normal phone call, agitated, upset, something had happened there, and they wanted to tell me about it. And they said the lady from the pharmacy, I'm sure, I don't know, probably a tech, approached them. They were just walking down the aisle and approached them pretty aggressively. Very sales pitchy, but even to the point my wife would call it aggressively. Come get your flu shot. Have you had your flu shot? And when the answer is no, well, come get it right now, all y'all. It can be free. Come right now. We don't have a wait. Get like almost trying to usher them in over to get their flu shot. And then, I mean, it scared my 5-year-old to the point he was talking about it at bed that night when we were saying our prayers. So something about the look on her face or the aggressiveness of her sales pitch was quite upsetting. But the most upsetting to me, and my wife said, it's a good thing you weren't there, Ben, you would have educated her, because they say this is the best way to prevent influenza. No, it's not. Where's the literature on that? Oh, the literature is out, and the Cochrane Review Board has said repeatedly it does very little to prevent the flu. The package insert, I think, even says it doesn't prevent the flu. And the literature shows clearly, Cochrane Review Board, which is an independent review board of medical literature, at least it used to be, before they fired their head guy, and I think put a political person in, but we'll get into that in another show. But the old Cochrane Review data is independent. And they've looked at dozens and dozens of influenza vaccine studies. Very little, if any, benefit. But does increase your risk of contracting other respiratory viruses. That's been clear even before COVID-19. And then, again, that was reiterated in January in the journal Vaccine. I've talked about this study before. You increase your risk of coronavirus infection 36%. When taking the 2018 flu shot. So if it does very little to nothing to prevent influenza, it increases your risk of other flu-like viruses. And why could that be? Well, this is just theory, which, by the way, most of modern medicine is theory, like the cholesterol theory of heart disease. But my theory on that is, if you're going to distract the immune system, number one, it's a man-made, artificial attempt at an immune response. It creates antibodies in the body, but does that translate to immunity? Not necessarily, and we'll talk about that when we get back from the break. But at best, it's going to focus your immune system and distract it, I would say, on this one strain or two or three strains of influenza that are in that shot. What about the 200 other strains of influenza? What about the 10,000 other respiratory viruses, adenoviruses, rhinoviruses, coronaviruses, respiratory syncytial virus, parainfluenza viruses, and there's probably thousands in each one of those groups I just listed. So we're going to focus our immune system on three bugs and forget the 10,000. Well, of course you're going to be more susceptible to some of those 10,000 viruses that aren't the influenza virus. So for a pharmacy tech to aggressively sales pitch the family who are trying to get some shopping done and almost put fear into them and not have the full truth, I hope people start to see there, of course, there's a conflict of interest. Now, back when I thought, because I hadn't done my research, that the flu and flu shots were super effective. I loved the third and fourth quarter of the year. I'd get a huge bonus check because it was like $20 a pop every flu shot we could give. So we'd call up schools and businesses. We'd come to your business. We'd come out in the oil field and give you shots. Again, I thought I was doing the most beneficial thing. Now I know there's more beneficial things to do, like cut the sugar. cut the processed flour, cut the vegetable oil, eat nutrient-dense food, fast, narrow your eating window down to 12 hours. Occasionally, don't eat at all for 24 hours. It's called intermittent fasting. Drink water, not sugary drinks, including juices, including Powerade and Gatorade. Don't drink those. It's sugar. It's pure sugar. Drink mineralized water. On top of that, structured water. You do those two things, nutrient-dense food and avoid processed food and drink clean water, you're miles above the standard American who just got a free flu shot at the pharmacy while they're walking by doing their grocery shopping. Miles above. Add a little exercise into that. Even if you didn't do those first two categories and just exercised every hour, got up out of your chair and walked down the hall for 5 minutes, and then at the end of the day did some aerobic stuff, did some resistance training, got your heart rate up, did some HIIT training, 7 minutes only, 30, 90, 30 seconds all-out sprint, 90 seconds cruise control mode. You can do that with any modality. Bicycle, trampoline, push-ups, jumping jacks, jump rope, whatever. 30, 90, 30, 90. You'd be miles ahead of just getting a flu shot. I'm sorry, Woodward. I'm blowing right through the break probably. Getting up on my soapbox. But my point is we can be so protected from COVID-19, COVID-20, COVID-21, COVID-22, on and on and on. You can be protected against influenza A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. You can be protected against adenovirus, respiratory syncytial virus, all the viruses, E. coli, salmonella, shigella, all the germs you can be protected against, and you don't need any man-made, synthetic, artificial way to do it. God gave you an immune system that is magnificent. It's incredible. If people only knew how amazing that immune system is, they would revere it. They would thank God for it, and they would steward it. They would steward it and take care of it and baby it more than they would a brand new Ferrari that you want on the Price is Right. If you only knew how amazing the body was designed. So that's why we're here, VeritasWellness.health. You can take the class to teach you these things because I'm trying not to drum up business for Veritas Medical. Veritas Medical's booked for 6 months. We're happy to see you. If you're super sick, you're on a bunch of meds, yeah, you're going to need some medical advice to be able to wean off meds when you start to steward your health. But otherwise, while you're waiting those 6 months, and hopefully before you would ever even get sick enough to need Veritas Medical, go to VeritasWellness.health, take the class, learn how to steward your health. I'm quite confident most people that take that will never need Veritas Medical, even if you're super sick now. Okay, VeritasWellness.health is a class. VeritasMedical.com is the website for all our medical stuff. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure. Stick with us.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, VeritasWellness.health. Check out the website there. Good, important information as well as archived programs, I believe, at VeritasWellness.health. That's the place to go and back at it. Of course, along the way, if you have a question, feel free to call or text. You can do that at 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800 along the way.
Yeah, the archive shows are at VeritasMedical.com. Sorry, I didn't tell you that, Wade. But the wellness, VeritasWellness.health is a class. Back to the topic today. For those of you who might have been tuning in to hear from Dr. Shukarit Bhagdi, the author, he co-authored with his wife, Dr. Karina Rice, but I interviewed Dr. Bhagdi. Corona False Alarm, it's a book that sold out basically in Germany in 6 weeks. They sold 200,000 copies and 75,000 e-books in 6 weeks and sold out. I had to go back to the printer and print more. Some of the topics covered in that book, how COVID-19 compares with previous coronaviruses and with the flu virus, what the infection numbers and death rate really tell us, the challenges around lockdown, mandatory mask wearing, and then he does touch on vaccines also. So we talk about all those in the interview, and that'll play next week. Sorry we weren't able to get that up today, but next week be looking for that. And I'm going to read a little excerpt from his book. He starts it off by saying, in scientific discussions, postulation of any thesis should also invite antithesis. so that finally the synthesis may resolve potential disagreement and enable us to advance in the interest of mankind. So he's starting his book off with this statement about, hey, there's this thesis, there's this theory, there's, and I'm just going to call it germ theory, but in the breakdown of that, there's lots of ways to go about approaching a germ or a quote-unquote pandemic. And there's other theories, other beliefs about that. We should be able to have a discussion, a legitimate, open forum, non-censored discussion about this. So he starts his book off by saying that. Towards the end of the book, he does talk about the failure of the public media, excluding present company there, Wade.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Here's what Dr. Bottke says in his book, Corona False Alarm, about the public media. In a working democracy, the media should provide the public with truthful news, foster opinion formation through critique and discussion, and oversee the action of the government as the fourth public authority, quote-unquote, with impartiality and autonomy. What we have experienced during the coronavirus pandemic is just the opposite. All public broadcasters became mouthpieces of the government. The press was no better. Regard for the truth, protection of human dignity, service to the public, the press codex disappeared from the scene worldwide. Human dignity, when I read that, it reminded me of a patient whose father, who's elderly, had to be in the hospital, of course, with the hospital rules. No, the family couldn't go in, or only one person could. After weeks of being sick, he survived, sent him to the nursing home. In the brief moment in the parking lot of the nursing home, from the ambulance into the nursing home, where the family also could not go in, the family, including a wife of 69 years, was able to catch a glimpse and spend a momentary eye contact and a momentary word with this father and grandfather. Absolute loss of human dignity. That man passed away a week or so later in the nursing home. His wife of 69 years not by his side, his family not being able to visit him that whole time in the hospital or the nursing home. Since when have we become a human race that secludes ourselves like this and allows people to die alone? That is not who we are. And that is not being led by our spirit. That's being led by something else. So, I highly recommend Dr. Bottke's book. Again, we'll interview him next week. One other thing I want to mention. I've quoted Dr. Gupta from Oxford in my previous Facebook Live videos. She teamed up, joined with a couple of other pretty smart doctors, one from Stanford, one from Harvard. Dr. Martin Kulldorff, professor of medicine at Harvard University, biostatistician and epidemiologist with expertise in detecting and monitoring infectious disease outbreaks and vaccine safety evaluations. That's Dr. Martin Kulldorff, professor of medicine at Harvard, along with Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, professor at Stanford University Medical School, a physician, an epidemiologist, a health economist, and a public health policy expert focusing on infectious diseases and vulnerable populations. That's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. And then, of course, Dr. Sunatra Gupta, professor at Oxford University, epidemiologist with expertise in immunology, vaccine development, mathematical modeling of infectious disease. These three doctors from Oxford, Harvard, and Stanford came up with the Great Barrington Declaration. And you can go read this declaration, and you can sign it if you feel so moved to do so, at this website, GB, as in Great Barrington, that's B as in boy, gbdeclaration.org. Read the whole declaration. It's just a few paragraphs long. There are multiple public health scientists and medical practitioners who are co-signers beyond those three I just mentioned. And then they ask other doctors if they want to sign to go ahead and do that. And so, as of last time I looked, let me look real quick, refresh here, 14,880 medical practitioners have signed this in conjunction with the original authors. And this has just been out for like a week. 6,802 medical and public health scientists have signed on in addition to the physicians, and over 235,000 concerned citizens. Great Barrington Declaration, gbdeclaration.org. I'd encourage you to go read that. And the point I'm making here is I've talked to so dozens and dozens of doctors around this country and outside of this country, and it's around the globe. Doctors on the front lines, practicing physicians who feel like they can speak up are. That's why there's going to be another summit of the frontline doctors next weekend in Washington, D.C. These doctors are being overwhelmed in telemedicine requests from patients around the country seeking hydroxychloroquine because they're elderly and they're symptomatic, and early treatment, multiple studies show, is very beneficial and reduces death rates substantially to the order of 70 to 90%, according to published data. But these patients around the country can't get their doctors to write for the prescription, so they're having to do telemedicine health with these frontline doctors. It's really crazy. And when you talk to these doctors privately, they're scared of their medical license, or they're scared of ridicule, or one doctor said their health system's policy, the guys in the business office, and I'm sure there's a chief medical officer advising, they're making policy for all the clinics in these groups, and one of these is down in Houston. They will not treat COVID-19 as an outpatient. They will not see you as a patient in a clinic. You will go to the ER. So many of these doctors are either scared or they're being told that they're not going to treat these patients outpatient. Well, that's the best hope for getting anything done in comorbid elderly especially. It's the best hope because it is more deadly than influenza in that older population with comorbidities, for sure. But it's less deadly in young people, so why are we testing every NCAA football player? I mean, don't get me started on these kids. Well, do get me started, because I had a gentleman tell me this weekend that his 10-year-old, he had talked to a friend who's said, please pray for my 10-year-old. He's got the COVID scare. And my friend didn't know what the guy was talking about. He said, you know, you've heard of the COVID scare. Like, this is a diagnosis. I'm sure it's not, but they were acting like it was. Like, the COVID scare is an official name. This 10-year-old boy is scared to death. He's scared to leave his house. He's scared to talk or touch or do anything, to see, look at. He's afraid. He's scared to interact with the world and with society and with family and friends. And I'm sure there's lots and lots of kids this way. If they only knew that last year during the flu season, there was more risk of them dying from flu than there is of them dying from this virus. If they only knew the truth would set them free. So, I've been told by many people, just chill out, relax. Once the election's over, all this will go away. And maybe it will. Someone sent me a little meme that said, Doc, when's this COVID-19 thing going to be done? And the doctor said, I don't know. I'm just a doctor. I'm not a politician. And then when I saw that poll from Gallup that it's right down party lines, basically you think about COVID-19 one way or the other, totally based off your political leaning. It just confirmed the political nature of this. So we try to stay out of politics and try to stay with the truth. Now, if the truth right now happens to line up with one political party, well, so be it. I'm not saying that's going to be the case every time. I'm just a doctor, and I try to represent the truth as best I can. And I've had people ask me, you know, who are you and where you came from? And I want to just remind people the reason I even got out of conventional family medicine, not got out of, because we still practice that, but I matured. I added more knowledge and more weapons in my arsenal, I'll say. We have more tools in our toolkit. Coming out of medical school, the toolbox you have is full of pharmaceuticals and surgery, and that's it. Well, now as an integrative or functional practitioner, more holistic, natural-minded, you understand there's a whole lot more tools for the toolbox. It's awesome. But even maturing beyond that, you realize that beyond the green version of pharmaceutical-based medicine, which is all these supplements and vitamins and IVs and cool things, but beyond the green version, the natural therapies of treating the symptom is steward your health so that you don't have symptoms. That's what I saw early on. Once my mind was open to the fact diseases don't just come out of nowhere. Diseases come because of your diet and lifestyle, period. Medical literature is clear on it. 1912, Dr. Chris Kenobi told us a couple of months ago on the show, the first heart attack ever recorded in America. There's one in 1912. And now it's the number one killer. Over 650,000 people are going to die from heart disease. It's crazy. How do we go from one ever? Or how do we go from none? They asked William Osler, Sir William Osler, founder of Johns Hopkins Medical School, and a father of modern medicine, and at the end of his career, they asked him, how many heart attacks did you see? None in his whole career. How many cases of angina, that's chest pain, from the heart muscle not getting enough oxygen? 20. He could think of 20 in his entire career. So how do we go at the turn of the century from no such thing as heart attacks, no doctor had ever seen one, to now it's the number one killer? How in the world? It's not your genes. Genes don't change that fast. It's eating industrialized, processed, food-like substances, which unfortunately is about all you can find in America to eat. You have to be a very savvy, modern-day hunter-gatherer to go hunt and gather out and find those food producers who are producing real food. It's out there, and there's more and more every day, but it's difficult. And even more difficult probably than that is once you find them, you have to just get yourself to eat that, because the temptation's always to go back because we're busy, out of convenience and cost. It's cheap. I was at Costco. I didn't see how many pounds this bag was, but it was just sugar. A huge bag. It's probably 25 or 30 pounds. Maybe it's 50. I don't know. Huge bag, like a feed sack full of sugar. And it was like $12. It was crazy. Anyways, we won't go off on that. But I'm just saying, when we're so busy, it's so easy just to grab and go. And you have your old habits and your old stomping grounds and your old restaurants you always go to. The menus you know off the top of your head. What's on your way home, you know the drive-thrus to go through, this whole pattern, this whole habit, because we're so busy. So there's a lot to this modern-day living in the world but not of the world. It can be tough, and you have to be disciplined, and you have to say no to some things. But there's hope once you reset your habits, once you get your sweet tooth gone, once you don't eat those Rice Krispie treats that are full of iron, vegetable oil, high fructose corn syrup, corn solids, and a bunch of chemical. Once you get over that, that stuff will turn your stomach once you put a bite of it in your mouth. So give it time. You can change your thoughts and your mind and your habits and not be a standard American, and then you won't have to worry about COVID-19. So back to where I was going. Once I understood there was more to this medicine thing than what I learned in medical school, and that people could get better outcomes by adding those tools to my toolbox, but going even deeper, going to the four pillars, stewarding your own God-given design. You don't have to worry about heart attacks, just like your great-great-grandparents 100 years ago didn't have to worry about it. You won't have to worry about cancer. You won't have to worry about autoimmune. You won't have to worry about dementia and degenerative diseases that didn't exist because our ancestors were healthy. We're going to interview someone in November, another breathing expert. I interviewed Patrick McKee on the Oxygen Advantage about breathing, nasal breathing. And George Catlin, an American painter back in the 1800s, traveled to the Great Plains and the South Plains and South America, 200 different Native American tribes, and they were in perfect health. They were tall, lean, muscular, perfect health, lived to be old. Their babies didn't die. In fact, he asked every chief of every tribe, do your babies die? When's the last time a baby died or a kid, a child died? None of them could remember it except the rare occasional accident from a horse kick in the head or a rattlesnake bite or something like that. Their kids didn't die. And what he noted was the mothers would close the baby's lips after nursing they'd pinch the lip shut, and the baby would have to nasal breathe. And anytime he opened his mouth, they'd pinch the lip shut, and they trained these kids to breathe through their nose. That's the whole point of the book, is the benefits of oxygen and breathing and breathing techniques and mouth breathing versus nasal breathing. If you didn't hear the interview, go back and listen. And we're going to interview James Nestor, who wrote a book called Breathe, later in November. But my point is, something as simple as nasal breathing confers great health to us. It's amazing. And people say, well, turn of the century, the life expectancy was only like 50 years old or something like that. No. Let me clarify that. If you made it past your fifth birthday, then you pretty much could live to be 100. People lived old and healthy without degenerative disease. So what happened before the fifth birthday? All diphtheria and pneumonia and measles and whooping cough, pertussis, all these germs were killing 50% of kids living in these big industrial revolution cities, industrialized cities, New York, Boston, Manchester, London. The death rate in these big cities was horrendous. But if you made it past your fifth birthday, you had a normal life expectancy. You didn't have heart attacks and cancer and degenerative disease and autoimmune disease and all this stuff. And what caused the 99% drop in infectious disease at the turn of the century? I've presented this multiple times. Go look it up in one of my videos, or look it up yourself. Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, Dissolving Illusions, is where I got it from, her great book. 99% drop in measles mortality, 99% drop in whooping cough mortality in the early 1900s prior to the vaccine. When they figured out the terrain theory, when they figured out Louis Pasteur was only half the coin, the other side of the coin was Bernard and the terrain theory, and they cleaned it up. They got fresh water into the city. They cleaned up the sanitation, the sewage. They got nutrient-dense food to those kids because all the crops were grown out in the country and they weren't getting into the city very easily. So they weren't eating high-quality food. They didn't have clean water, and they had poor sanitation, just like we see in Africa. Get the basics down, and these germs are not going to kill you. And it is true today, too. It's just more of a challenge today. We have the clean water, pretty much. We've got the hand-washing thing down, but we're completely devoid of nutrients. We're full of toxicity, and we're all mouth-breathing. We're all obese. 70% of people are overweight or obese in America. That will cause your cells to not have cellular health. Your macrophage, the Pac-Man that gobble up COVID-19, will not gobble up that virus efficiently, and that virus can replicate and overwhelm you and could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. If your macrophage can't deal with it, if your T cell can't deal with it, if your B cells and your new natural killer cells, if all these immune system cells can't deal with it, why can they deal with it? Because they can't make energy and they can't clear exhaust, because you're full of vegetable oil, processed flour, and sugar and toxins. Clean it up. Eat real food. Clean your life up. And more than anything, we're going to talk about this, I think, after the election, because I've got the next few shows lined up. But we're going to talk about true peace for the rest of the year after November and December. We're going to talk about not stress management. We're going to talk about your thoughts and where your thoughts are coming from. Are they coming from the accuser, the father of all lies, or are they coming from the truth? When your thoughts line up with the truth, you can be at peace despite your circumstances. When I look at that billy goat, and if I have a truthful thought that God gave us that goat for a reason, he's going to help us make babies, and then we'll be able to make some milk, and the kids can learn a lot of responsibilities on doing chores, and I see all the benefit of it, then I can stay at peace. But if I just look at that billy goat, I'm going to become known as a billy goat doctor. If I look at that billy goat and just think, man, you stinky old thing, and you're going to try to jump out of the pen, and you're going to headbutt me if I bend over, and you're going to just give me nothing but heartache and misery, then I'm going to go into fight or flight mode. It starts and ends with my thoughts. Line the thoughts up with the truth, and then your response to your circumstances will be different. Oh, my wife would be smiling right now. Even if it weren't for my goats. She says we keep these goats around. She keeps them around to keep me humble, since I've gotten a little more press lately. The goats keep me humble, and they also help my peace pillar. So she'd be proud of me talking about the goats this morning. She usually doesn't listen to the show, but I'm going to tell her to listen to this one. All right, I think we're done. Thank you, Wade, for letting me sit in. We'll have Dr. Botke's interview next week. We'll have the audio figured out. That's a great interview. Corona False Alarm is his book. Go get it before the interview and read it, and then listen next week. We'll be back. This is Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
Again, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, You're the Cure. Check out the website, VeritasWellness.health.